The following is brought to you in association with and from a proud partner of the Shining Wizards Network. Entertainment here.
The following presentation is a production of WLWStudios.com. You are listening to a WLW Studios production, available on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, and our home, WLWStudios.com, live every second Saturday of the month at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on RantEMRadio.com and broadcasting from WLW Studios North, outside of New York City, where the 80s and 90s return from the dead. This is the Midnight Jury.
It's Friday night, and the mood is right. We're gonna have some fun, show you how it's done, TGI.
Listening to the Midnight Jury, coming to you from the Long Island Sound. It is summer here at WLW Studios North on the Midnight Jury compound. I am one of your hosts, the 21st Century Broadcasting Marvel, Midnight Mike.
And I'm your very best pal, Calvin Brody.
Now, Cal was not here when we did Back to the Future 1. We're going to get your thoughts on that in a second, but I just want to give everybody a quick Midnight Jury programming alert. Navy SEALs, I'm going to be heading to Walt Disney World. So if you're in Florida and you're in the area, come meet me at Walt Disney World. I'm going to be there the last week, the last 2 days of June and the first day of July. Epcot, Magic Kingdom, MGM, in that order. So come by and find me and say hello. Hit me up on Twitter. I'd be glad to go on a ride with you. It'll be a blast. But anyway, we're going to push off Navy SEALs. We're going to have our live show, obviously, at the beginning of July, and then we'll do Navy SEALs after that. But right now, we're here to do Back to the Future 2. And like I said, Cal was not here for part one. I did that with Tony Broccadetta. You can go back and check that out. Spoiler alert, I think it ended with an A. I gave it an A plus, and he gave it a differentiated F. No, I'm just kidding.
As he does,
no,
folks.
I'm just kidding. But it did end out in the A range. It was very liked by all. Cal, what did you think of the first movie, or what you can remember?
It's a great movie. It's fun. It's quirky. It's whimsical. It's a great movie. It introduces you to a lot of great actors that you may not necessarily, like Crispin Glover. He's not necessarily a household name, but everything.
If you're a Friday the 13th Part 4 fan, you are.
That is correct.
Or he is.
If you're also a Charlie's Angels fan, because he was in, I think, both those 2000 movies when they came out. I think he was in both of those, at least the first one, certainly. It's a very enjoyable movie. So, yeah.
Would you have, you think you would have put it in the high B or A range?
Probably, yeah. Probably an A or an A minus.
Well, the one thing that I remember during that episode, and like I said, I did give it an A or an A minus or something like that. But the one thing I did remember, because it's an enjoyable movie, as is, in my opinion, Back to the Future 2.
Yeah.
But I did, you know, there is nitpicking, and I know people were like, wow, you know, these guys are really picking this movie apart. And it's because it's such an enjoyable movie, you might as well pick apart the things. And one of the things that carries over to this movie and was in the first movie that I thought was overkill. It's not that I didn't like it. It's overkill. It's how many times the movie can be over and they just keep giving you another thing of suspense.
Yeah.
So in the first film, I don't fully remember, but it's like he gets his parents back together. That's your like thing throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
Of you know, that's the suspense. So then you get, you finally, you know, breathe that sigh of relief when his picture reappears. But then there's the, there's like a whole thing of, you know, oh, but can he get to the DeLorean in time?
Yeah.
Then the cable breaks.
The DeLorean won't start.
Then the DeLorean won't start. It's just over. It just, they don't know when to end it. It's like they keep doing it and they do it again in this movie.
Yeah. There's like two or three times of that in this movie.
Yeah. You think it's the end, but it's not actually the end of the film. Yeah, I hope everybody has checked us out recently. Last week we did Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. To much of our surprise, we both enjoyed it very much.
Great movie.
Me being a big Elvira fan and you being not.
Yeah.
It turned out great, and it's a very enjoyable episode. And then, of course, our live show like 2 weeks ago, Ocho took you down again. So
that was 80s rough.
Trivia. Check it out. We also
I hadn't been feeling well. I didn't want to bring it up at the time because it felt like an excuse, but I feel like enough time's gone by. I wasn't feeling 100%.
It feels like an excuse.
You know, it's just I was a little under the weather. You know, who knows?
Yeah. Excuse, but that's okay. We also reviewed and listened to Kiss Creatures of the Night, which
terrific.
Was also amazing. So we've had a lot of great shows recently. Check them out and go over to WLWstudios.com. You can put almost anything
almost.
Into the search bar from the 80s and 90s. And in our 300 plus episodes, you're going to find something you like. So go over to WLW Studios and check all that out. Of course, on the Shining Wizards Network, we are available on all major podcast platforms. Just put in Shining Wizards Network if you prefer to listen to our show on Stitcher or on iTunes or whatever. But fuck all those guys. Not the Shining Wizards Network, but fuck all those people. We're not on there because so many, you know, we've been hit by cancel culture on three separate occasions. We want you to always go to WLWstudios.com to check out our episodes. And of course, if you like the show, the least you could do for us is go over and just retweet and like our stuff on Twitter or go over to patreon.com/midnightjury and donate as little as $3 a month or buy one of our shirts at belowthecollar.com/midnightjury. Four designs to choose from small to 4 or 5 XL, men's, women's, youth, all that stuff. It's just a great, great, great merchandise store. We're very, very happy with it. And we still haven't got our Elvira standee from a fan. I want that.
No.
So someone better PayPal us or send us $50 or the Elvira standee, and you will be like, we will call you out. Every episode we'll be like, thank you, John Doe or John Wayne Gacy, because he was donating to our Patreon for a while. We appreciate it.
COVID took that out, but he was
he went through a hard time.
Avid supporter.
The
for
estate
quite some
of
time.
John Wayne Gacy had a hard time. But all right, let's go. Let's get into this. So let's hit our ads. But first, it's our TV show theme of the week. What do you think of when I say Craig T. Nelson?
It's Maude.
It's not Maude. Ladies and gentlemen, here's some coach for you. We'll be right back. I don't accept that. I don't accept that. That was ridiculous. That was the bad one. I will not be let our audience go away with that. That was just unacceptable. So we're going to try it again. Craig T. Nelson, coach. First, for a message from StreamYard.
The other thing I like about StreamYard is that
what do you
if
like?
There's ever a
old
glitch in your
guy who should be
a
Metallica,
your stream is...
Fuck this. Okay, so check it out. I'm just leaving it all in. Here we go. Let's try this one last time. I can barely hear it. It sounds shitty.
Yeah.
Da 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 da. Remember Craig T. Nelson, folks? Do you? I do. He coached a fake football team in Minnesota. Was it Minnesota or Michigan?
I don't know. I think it was Michigan.
No, either way, it was a team that didn't really exist. We're just going to talk over this week's TV show theme of the week. People, new listener, if there's a new listener, they're like, these guys suck. It's not our fault this week, folks.
It could be an old listener. They're saying these guys suck.
Now, I bet they cut off the ending again. All right, that was it. That was Coach. We'll be back after some ads, and we're doing Back to the Future 2.
Messages. We'll be right back. Yeah.
Hi, this is Zach Ward from Freddy vs. Jason and also Scott Farkas from A Christmas Story.
This is Ari Lehman, the first Jason Voorhees from Friday the 13th.
Hey, this is the Wild Tommy Dreamer.
This is Sean Whalen from Never Been Kissed, Twister, People Under the Stairs, That Thing You Do.
This is Deborah Voorhees from Friday the 13th, Part 5.
Hey, this is Buff Bagwell, and you're listening to The Midnight Jury.
And you are listening to The Midnight Jury.
And you are listening to The Midnight Jury.
You're listening to The Midnight Jury.
And you are listening to Midnight Jury.
And you're listening to The Midnight Jury. Jason never dies.
Bob Daddy, listen to it!
Hey, what's up? It's Midnight Mike. Throughout our long history here on The Midnight Jury, we have been targeted on a few separate occasions by what has now been deemed as cancel culture. Unlike most, we will not apologize, and we will never back down. That's why we need your support more than ever by donating to our Patreon, buying our merch, or, most importantly, streaming and downloading our shows directly through our website at WLWstudios.com. We appreciate everyone who listens to our show, and these are the ways that you can send love back to us. Thank you so much for the continued support, and we hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
Everyone knows a lot of things can change in the span of 10 years, but when it comes to professional wrestling podcasting, one thing is still guaranteed. The Shining Wizards is the only place to get all the latest wrestling news, interviews with the greatest guests, and of course, tons of laughs in discussing the world of wrestling. The show is still available on Monday nights at 7 p.m. East on RantDMRadio.com and Rant Entertainment Media on the TuneIn app, and it's still available on all podcasting platforms. Check us out. Head over to ShiningWizards.com, where it's still wrestling talk and talk about wrestling.
Are you tired of being told what to think and believe by Hollywood elites and politicians who just don't care about you?
Tired of not getting the truth when you watch the news?
Tired of trying to figure out what pronoun to use?
Tired of mob mentality when all you want to do is think for yourself and make up your own mind?
That's where we come in. This is Justin.
And Vince.
Your hosts of Inconclusive Breakdown.
We are a weekly anti-PC podcast bringing you entertainment and current event news without any spin.
If you want to truly stay informed on what's going on in the world, then give us a listen every Sunday, anywhere you get podcasts, at least till Zuckerberg and Twitter Jack deplatform us.
And as always, we're proud members of the Shining Wizards Network.
Do looking at your walls make you depressed? Well, go to Router Designs Custom Signs and brighten them up. Here at Router Designs Custom Signs, we got you covered. Business logos, podcast logos, sports logos, logos of logos. At Router Designs, we do it all. So you can buy a wood sign to hang on your wall. Void where prohibited. Purchase necessary. Go to RouterDesignsCustomSigns at gmail.com for rules and pricing. Member of the Equal Sign Zone. For more information, go to RouterDesignsCustomSigns at gmail.com. That's RouterDesignsCustomSigns at gmail.com.
Broadcasting outside the city that never sleeps. This is WLWstudios.com, New York City.
Right.
are back on the Midnight Jury. We're getting ready to join Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd, Leah Thompson, Thomas F. Wilson, Elizabeth Shue, James Tolkien, and yeah, Billy Zane, Titanic. What happened?
Man makes his own luck.
Billy Zane, Titanic. Director Robert Zemeckis. This is Back to the Future 2 on the Midnight Jury. What we got to do is we got to get some numbers in. Thank you to Jeff for sending those in. Lewis probably, once again, didn't have anything to do with it because I see they're already up.
Then we got to jump in our own time machine so we can review a movie about a time machine, you guys.
Amazing. All right, give us some of those numbers.
All right, let's check the shit out. God, that theme is just fantastic.
Nice.
It's just adventure. Just an adventure theme.
Sounds so mystical and magical.
Yeah. As time travel would and should be.
Composed by Alan Silvestri.
There you go. He's a big name. That's a... You'd gone on the Back to the Future ride at Universal. Well, I know you're not a big Universal guy.
Never even been to Universal.
I know you don't want to go to Universal.
Nope, no interest.
Sure, if you had
no interest, when Disney's right around the corner.
Yeah,
which once again I will be there the last 2 days of June, the first day of July.
Universal is swiftly becoming the better park, you guys. For real.
Fake news. Give me the numbers.
All right, so here we go. Man, Universal's such a good park. So the budget was an estimated $40
million. Compared to Disney, Universal is just not...
Disney is showing us that it has no place to go but down, whereas Universal shows us that there's no place to go but further up.
Is that the case?
That is indeed the case. Mm. Yeah.
Universal.
She's the worst person in the world. Huge skank.
When some blue hair tells you you're a racist at Disney this summer, I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, but I'm the kind of person who... That's the funny thing. There's stuff that I write on like Facebook. I comment on things. And people will be like, I hope you realize that you're coming off as a homophobe, bigot, you know, racist Nazi or whatever they use. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. I was like, I don't know you.
Yeah.
You can think whatever you want. They don't know how to comprehend that.
Yeah.
They're so used to people being like, no, I have a black friend. Or no, my cousin is gay. Or no, they're so used to it. They don't know what to do when someone goes, yeah, that's cool. Whatever you want to think. I don't know you. You don't know me. Well, so
you're right on time for Disney parks deciding that quality is a racist thing. Is a racist thing to have.
Well, just remember, before we get these numbers, that if you don't like and listen to the Midnight Jury...
And you ain't black.
No, that's a real thing, folks. That's true.
That's the truth.
And he's our president, and I'm being told that everything he says is the way that things should be. So guess what?
Mm-hmm. In America, you can have a completely deranged old man who doesn't know where he is running the country.
America! Fuck yeah!
Coming again to save the motherfucking day.
Give me the numbers.
This movie had an estimated budget of $40 million United States American dollars. My fucking mic thing's acting all weird here. With an opening weekend, November 26th of 1989. That's Thanksgiving weekend. That's interesting. An opening weekend of $27.8 million and a gross U.S. of $119 million.
Nice.
So that's certainly a success by any stretch, but then you have the...
Didn't even matter. They knew that they were already filming part three. That's the problem I have with, like, okay, part three, I'm not a huge fan of. I don't hate it.
Yeah, it's good.
It's good for what it is, but what it is is a movie that they already knew they were going to make a sequel for and started making it immediately after making the one prior to it,
yeah.
Thus giving it the rushed, just inferior product. Another example of that is Halloween 5 off of Halloween 4.
Yeah.
You know, Halloween 4 did great at the box office. It was one of the biggest movies of the year. It was a good film. It's one of my favorite Halloween movies. But immediately they started filming 5. It was out in theaters a year after the first one, and you can't do that. You've got to give things time to sizzle.
Yeah.
It's almost like the anticipation that we talked about on the live show. You know, we were talking about all the shows we watch. It's the anticipation leading into a new season of Cobra Kai.
Yeah.
You know, you give it time. Let people talk. Oh, what's going to happen? You know, I can't wait. Oh, give it. You have to have people begging for it.
Almost,
to
exactly.
put it out. You know, you don't just, oh, it's popular. Oh, let's make more right now.
No, that's like how Hollywood works.
Like Mighty Ducks Game Changers just ended a few weeks ago, and I expect them, if there's a second season, to wait. Same thing like how they've waited with Stranger Things. It's like you just let people
this
want
Disney,
it.
This is Disney, so they're not gonna.
No, but let people want it. You know, you don't just give it to people. And that's the problem they had with, in my opinion, Back to the Future 3.
Yeah, well, I was surprised because, so I wound up, you watched it on Prime, right?
Correct.
So I watched it on DVD.
I have it on VHS.
And so the DVD of it, I didn't realize this. The DVD of it has like a sneak preview of 3.
No, so did Prime, everything does. Even the VHS, the movie did. In theaters.
Okay, because I wasn't sure if it was in theaters. IMDb specifically says that the DVD for certain regions, the DVD version for regions 1 and 2 has to be concluded, followed by the teaser for part 3, just before the start of the credits. And that actually, that...
Then maybe I'm wrong.
That works
but
against
I'm saying,
it for
I'm saying
me.
I always remember that.
I always
and
remember
the first
the,
time
the,
I've watched
concluded.
It was on the VHS.
I always remember the to be concluded, but I didn't remember that they had included the sneak preview of 3. That works against it for me. I think 2 does a really, really good job of referencing the things in 3. And I think that
it
would have done a better job not showing that they'd already had 3, like,
yeah, well, the
made.
Thing is that I, this time, especially watching it critically, I noticed all of the nods to the Old West and 1885 and all that stuff. And had I been watching it, like, in the theater in 1989 for the first time, you wouldn't put that together.
Exactly.
But then when 3 came out, you'd be like, holy shit.
You would watch 2 and you'd be like, oh my God, they set the stage for it so well. And they really did. But then they show the... But the cumulative worldwide gross for this movie, so again, an estimated budget of $40 million has a cumulative worldwide of $332.5 million.
God, I wonder what that'd be like $600 million today.
Probably, yeah.
That is crazy. Well, let's get this started. Let's hop in the Midnight Machine and head back to 1989.
Initiate sequence!
A Midnight Jury flashback.
The 1980s.
I love the 80s. I love the 80s.
And that sound sounds familiar.
Huh.
Anyway, we are back. It is 1989. It's time to check out the trailer for Back to the Future 2.
Do you remember the future?
Just clips from the first. That's all we're seeing.
You gotta come back with me.
There we
Where?
Go.
Back to the future.
What, are we become assholes or something?
Are we back?
We're back.
What do you mean we're in the future?
October 21st, 2050.
Marty, we're
going to
be able to see our wedding.
Wow. Future. I got to check this out, Doc.
Look what happened to your son.
He's a complete wimp.
Don't talk to anyone. You've been looking.
Hey, look.
Don't touch anything.
I need to borrow your hoverboard.
Try not to look at anything. I didn't invent the time machine to win at gambling.
I can't lose.
I invented a time machine to travel through time.
Hey, Doc, I'm all for that. What's wrong with making a few bucks on the side?
Now, the time continuum has been disrupted, creating an alternate 1985.
There have been a few changes.
It's like we're in hell or something.
No, it's Hill Valley, although I can't imagine hell being much worse.
But they'll all be back.
Eat less, slackers!
Hello? Hello, anybody home? Mom, it can't be you. You're so big.
Michael J. Fox. Christopher Lloyd. Michael J. Fox.
More like a couple of teenagers.
And Michael J. Fox.
Mom, is that you?
Steven Spielberg presents...
Oh, my God. That's why she's so ugly.
Back to the Future.
I wrote how ugly she was. I didn't even realize.
Coming November 22nd to theaters everywhere.
Oh, that's funny.
Look, I'm going to go ahead. All right. Unpopular opinion. Time for a hot take. Thomas Elf Wilson is one of the greatest actors of our generation.
His, I don't know. That's an unpopular opinion.
Biff
is
followed by old Biff, followed by Griff, followed by Buford Tannen is a masterwork.
I don't have that. I mean, he's a good character in the movie, no doubt.
He put on a clinic, and he was in April Fool's Day.
I don't understand your and Mayfield's obsession with Biff. He's good.
He's such a funny...
But like it's not like he's Luke Perry. It's not like he's Court.
No, especially...
It's not like he's Tom Atkins.
No, especially... Oh,
that's
God,
our upper, that's our upper, that's, upper,
that
echelon,
upper echelon
of our celebrities.
Tom Atkins runs the upper echelon. Luke Perry's like, I'll let you, but like...
Because you're still alive.
But no, Biff is just... Especially, like, look, he has a lot of fun, and I was going to get into it later, but we can touch on it now. Biff is
Why don't you just wait?
Okay.
Let me
open the door, counselor.
Let's get this started. Ladies and gentlemen, 1989, Back to the Future.
And now, our feature presentation.
All right. So the movie starts out. You can defend Biff later. The movie starts out Saturday, October 26th, and it cuts right out from the end of the first film.
Love this.
But with a new Jennifer.
Yeah.
So now it's Elizabeth Shue playing Jennifer. So they refilmed these scenes.
That was Elizabeth Shue. I was like, wow, she looks like Elizabeth. I don't remember her looking like Elizabeth Shue so much.
Yeah. Well, they refilmed the ending scenes of Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Exactly. But with Elizabeth Shue as Jennifer.
With Elizabeth Shue. And I guess with Doc with the old man makeup.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, and then also we mentioned that Crispin Glover is not in this film and actually sued the film. And the makers of the film.
I didn't know that. Is that why they have him just upside down so you can't get a good like look at his face?
Yes, and they show him from the back when they're doing some of the like the 50s scenes and things like that. But he sued them because they actually used prosthetics to make him look exactly like Crispin Glover.
Wow. I didn't even put that together.
Yeah, that was actually a big thing. You can check it out. Crispin Glover's a little crazy, but he'll talk. You could see, like, I don't know if it wasn't Joe Rogan. It was like a radio show he was on where he talks about it and what happened.
He was great in Charlie's Angels.
I wrote in this, it starts off at the end of the first film with the new Jennifer. I said, what a knob the first Jennifer must feel like. You really missed out. Like, this is a series you should have been a part of.
Yeah.
And then I wrote, right away, fake Crispin Glover is there. They show him from a distance in the doorway. although that could have been, I think they did use some shots, like you know the binocular shot in the Under the Sea dance. That's
when
Crispin
he's doing
Glover,
the
I believe. Yeah, I think they just reused that. And he goes, Doc, we need to go back to the future. And he goes, well, there's not enough room on this road. And he goes, where we're going, we don't need roads. I wrote 2015.
As you say,
where was I?
That inspired that senior quotes for the next fucking 40 years.
Yeah, where was I in 2015? Was I asleep? I mean, we have Midnight Jury episodes there. I don't remember.
Not using roads.
And
it's also interesting that when the car goes back in time, even though it's in hover mode, it makes tire tracks in the sky.
I like that. I have no problem with that. But also, Biff sees that.
Yes.
And figures something is up. So that's your first inkling that Biff kind of is knowing something is going on.
He wants to show the matchbooks he just got made.
Yeah, Biff's
flying
auto.
Flying DeLorean, huh?
Biff's auto or Biff's casino. It depends on what timeline
Biff's
you're on.
Biff's pleasure palace.
I also want to point out that I'm just so upset that I never got when Pepsi, in 2015, Pepsi released the Pepsi.
Yes.
And then Nike released the shoes.
Yeah.
And now if you go online,
it's hundreds of dollars. It's ridiculous.
Because I would rock those shoes.
Yeah.
I'd wear them around. And if people said something, I'd be like, Back to the Future 2. And then I'd be able to weed them out. You know, just like Michael in the club when he wants to get the tattoo in the office, the tattoo that on his back that says Back to the Future. And the girl's like, what's that? Like, you don't know Back to the Future. So they jump ahead in time to October 21st, 2015. And I wrote, LOL, I love how Doc gets out. And he's like, I put on a disguise so that you would recognize me. And he pulls it off. It's exactly the same. Very funny. Made me laugh.
And he did look a little bit older in the makeup. Once he takes it off, he does look a little bit younger.
To me, I thought the joke was that he looked exactly the same. I love the Nikes. I wrote they sold those, and I wrote, but that hat is gay.
This is the first. I really like the jacket that Doc
gives the hat.
gay.
Yeah, that like that oil slick.
But it's
like,
rainbowy, and yeah. I know rainbow. But come on, it just that looks like a hat a middle school girl would wear.
Yeah.
You know what I'm
like
saying?
Like a tomboy.
Like, remember those hats that girls used to wear in the 90s and they'd be like denim, but then they'd be bedazzled?
Yes.
This goes in with that, you know?
Now, this scene when Marty puts the shoes on, and I brought it up briefly during the Elvira episode, but when they get into the future, it's pouring. Doc parks the DeLorean and says, "All right, Marty, you're going to have to get out and get changed and, you know, go do some bullshit." And Marty's like, "What? Get out, Doc. It's pouring." And he's like, "Oh, wait 5 more seconds." And then the rain stops. But the ground is still wet. And it shows Marty in his socks on the wet ground. And then he puts the sneakers on. And it's like, oh, my God. That's so terrible.
What? Okay, the ground was still wet.
The ground was still wet. And Marty is standing on the wet ground in his socks. And then he puts the shoes on. It's just putting shoes on with wet socks.
Oh, okay. It's
terrible.
Okay.
But I do like the jacket. The
jacket does
kind of jacket. It's looks cool for her pleasure. All right.
I'm actually online. I'm trying to figure out how much these shoes are going for now.
Too much. Just become shopping.
Where?
More.
No, they don't have it for some reason. I can't get to Google anymore.
Oh.
I just can't. So I'm on some other search engine that does this. Usually, when I pull it up, it just shows them.
Yeah.
Not on whatever search. I think Yahoo or...
I don't know, man.
Oh, there we go.
$25,000.
$25,000 for one pair.
That's LeBron.
Those don't look the same. Those don't look the same. These say $64. I don't buy that.
No, they're just probably from like Wish.
Look, those look like the Forrest Gump shoes. this is a really nice pair of shoes. But they have them. I would love... why wouldn't you just sell them?
Yeah.
I don't understand. I went on Nike, actually. I went on a bunch of shoe things because I needed to get a new pair of shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And all I wanted was a pair of black, like, basketball shoes.
Right.
You know, high tops.
Still, too much. You go into those shoes? Too much. You go into, like, Nike? Too expensive.
No. But what I'm saying is they don't really sell just regular black basketball shoes anymore. Like, even Sydney was like, "Why do you wear such high shoes?" And I'm like, not only were that was cool when I was younger, but... I need ankle support.
Right.
You know, so I tie them tight at the top because it makes my ankle feel better. You know, it feels like, you know, whatever. And it was just hard. I was looking for just simple basketball shoes and it was just a pain in the ass.
Yeah. But anyway. Walmart, spend like $12.
I ended up going to the Timberland outlets. I went to a bunch of outlets, but I have Timberland boots all the time. Like for the past 5 years, each year I get a new pair of black Timberlands.
Yeah.
And that's what I wear. And they'll last even longer. Like those, my old ones are down over there and I use them for when I cut the lawn and mm-hmm. do things like that. And they last so long that I was like, well, okay, I don't like what's here in the Nike. I don't like what's in the Adidas outlet. Let me check Timberland because I know their quality product. And I went in and they had a pair of just black high tops pretty much.
Not bad.
Yeah. And it worked out. He's out on the street in the town that was used for Elvira and Monster Squad also, and they have the Jaws 19. I loved it, but I loved the joke. I loved the idea, but in 2015, that Jaws shark would not have looked that bad.
No.
It would have looked very real. And he gets all scared of it.
Yeah.
It literally looks
legitimately
like,
scared of it.
Like I can't even compare the graphics. Like almost like Mario 64, but 10 times worse.
Like, almost.
Remember the things that had chains?
Yeah.
And
the
black balls? That's what it looked like, kind of.
Yeah, okay. Also, the tagline of the movie is, "This time it's really, really personal."
I didn't see that. That's funny.
Stupid.
The antique store in the town square, I wrote, is the only accurate thing so far.
Yeah, right?
You know, it just had stuff from the 80s and stuff in it. So if you go to an antique store or like a second, you know, whatever store today,
you're going to get a lot of the same
80s
stuff.
And 90s, early 90s stuff.
They were selling it like it was high-end. Would you like this dust buster? Like instead of just being thrown onto a shitty shelf?
That's how it would be nowadays. It'd just be like sitting there. So the big thing about this movie is that there's alternate timelines, so you can't run into your actual self, but there's also your relatives in different time periods, and you can't run into them also. So Doc tells Marty, "Hey, I need you to go to the 80s cafe, which is a retro, you know, place to eat in 2015, and just don't run into your kid who is him.
Yeah, literally exactly the same.
He's like, wow, he looks like me. Yeah, he looks like you. So real Marty Jr. shows up, and he basically, Doc tells him, Griff, who is Biff's son, is going to ask you to do something. Or Biff is going to. I forget which one he says.
Griff is going to.
And you just say no, because if you say yes, the future, here's tomorrow's paper, you get arrested. So we have to cut that out of the timeline.
The headline reads, local youth jailed. It's like the front cover of a USA Today, like the front page. Like, it wouldn't even be the front page of, like, the town's newspaper, I feel like, let alone USA Today.
Well, I also like that the USA Today, they tried to make the logo look futuristic.
Yeah.
But it looks super 80s. So, like, everyone knows what the USA Today logo kind of looks like.
Right.
This one was, like, if you today look up retro 80s, yeah. like, font, it's that.
That's it, yeah.
So it's funny that they used that to actually date it more. Marty goes in and actually replaces Marty Jr. So now Griff doesn't know in the cafe who's who. He just assumes it's the same person all the time.
Can you imagine, like, real quick, not to interrupt your flow, but can you imagine being a patron at that diner?
And seeing the two Marty McFlys?
But not only that, Griff... So when Griff and his gang are giving Marty Jr. a hard time, first of all, you have... he gets decked in the face by Griff. Then you have the girl with the long nail where she's like, what's the matter, McFly? You got no scrote? And she like stabs his taint. And then he gets back up and says something else. And then Griff picks him up and bodily throws him over the counter. And like he smashes his back on like a thing below the TVs and then falls to the floor.
Well, and then don't they destroy a TV too?
Yes, they do.
It's like nobody in this establishment. First off, I didn't see an owner of this establishment. Yeah. And wasn't this establishment in the first film, The Diner?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So in 2015, it's morphed into an 80s cafe.
It's still a diner, but it's a themed diner. And all of the computer graphics on it are awful and do the glitchy repeating themselves.
But like that's
the
Star on Wars purpose because it's 80s.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Or like Max Headroom.
Correct.
Like when the fake Ronald Reagan or Ayatollah.
Yeah.
Come on. They do the, we're going, going. Yeah. To, you know, whatever. So real Marty says to Griff, no. To his operation.
Yeah.
I'm not going to help you. No.
No?
And he calls him chicken.
And then the guy in the vest.
I think that's one of the lamest things in movie history. Like the idea that being called a chicken bothers Marty so much.
It makes him just see red and he literally can't do anything else aside from defend himself from this accusation of being a chicken.
Yeah. In the first review of Back to the Future 1, Tony had me play this little like comedy, the stand-up comedian who does like a 2-3 minute bit on Back to the Future and how ridiculous it is. And one of the things he says, it's like a pitch meeting on how they're going to pitch this movie to like the brass at like a Universal or whatever. And they're like, and then we're going to have this kid, you know, like this Marty McFly. And they're going to be like, is he cool like Ferris Bueller? No. No. And he's not.
No.
Like Marty McFly.
Nobody's like, cool like Ferris Bueller.
Well, no, true. But my point being is, well, there are. Luke Perry, Zach Morris, right. Court.
Okay.
Tom Atkins. But
Tom Atkins is almost as cool as Ferris Bueller.
Oh, he's cooler.
Tom Atkins banged Ferris's mom.
Yeah, Tom Atkins banged Sloan. Are you kidding me? And Jennifer Grey at the same time.
At the same time.
But anyway, Marty McFly is a lucky cool.
Yeah.
Like he fell into this scenario with Doc that makes his life cool.
True.
But he himself is not that cool. he's kind of nerdy. And it's like this whole like, oh, chicken bothers you? Like, really?
Yeah, right.
Like, in the first film, it's like people were almost calling the owner of the diner the N-word. They're like, you know, you can't be mayor. And
he wasn't the owner of the owner of the diner was calling him an N.
Yeah, the owner of the diner was calling. He was like a he was swept
a busboy,
up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And being like, you're never going to be a mayor and all this stuff. And he did become mayor, but that didn't bother him. He was cool.
Yeah.
That black guy was cool.
That's true.
He didn't give a shit. That's the key to being cool.
That was Goldie Wilson.
Not giving a shit.
Mayor.
Marty gives a shit. Because you just call him a chicken. Imagine if they called him an N. You know, or calling him like, I don't know, faggot.
Whoa, he said the full word, folks.
But I'm using it in the context of, you know, like, what if they called him something actually considered offensive?
Yeah, right.
Like, I don't know anyone, you, a gay, a black, an Indian, anyone who would be, I'd be like, chicken, and they'd blow a gasket.
What?
Yeah, it just doesn't make
sense. I'm not a chicken.
Stupid. Punches Griff and steals a girl's hoverboard to get away from him and his tough gang.
I'd like when he does, so he first does the, hey, look, what's that? And Griff looks,
and
Griff goes to soccer.
Catches
Griff
it.
And so he not only catches it, but then he stands up to his full height, just like you saw in the first one. When Biff stands up to his full height, and then you only see like the top of Marty's eyes and like his forehead, because Biff is so big, but then Griff gets even larger.
Michael J. Fox is that small.
Correct.
Because he is. He's a tiny man.
Now, Griff is funny because like Biff's whole thing was he was just a bully. Like he was a little over the top, but essentially like he was just a bully, just like random regular bully stuff, you know? Starting with this one, Biff becomes Thomas F. Wilson's characters all in general become much, much more over the top. So you have Griff, who delivers all his lines like this. Oh, since when did you become the physical type? And it's like somebody.
Well, I also like Griff. I'm surprised Griff's silver hat never caught on in 2015.
Oh, yeah, it's this like spiked dome hat.
You know what he looks like? He looks like, did you ever see Mr. Nanny?
No.
With Hulk Hogan?
I have
not.
Actually, I think you showed it to me years and years ago.
The bad guy has a silver dome head.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
Isn't that Captain Mauser?
I have no idea. Yeah, maybe.
I feel like it's Captain Mauser from Police Academy.
Maybe.
But yeah, and just and all of it, even old Biff is much more of a character.
Well, I love how old Biff has the cane with the fist on it, just so he can knock people in the head. Like that's what other reason would you have for that? You know,
to show solidarity that Black Lives Matter.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like
point.
You would have to do. Well, not in 2015, but
no.
But yeah, no, all that great stuff. But then yeah, he shoves them all down, and now you get a repeat of the skateboard sequence, except. It's a hoverboard. And they all also have hoverboards, you guys.
And I have seen a lot of cool, like, that you could buy prototypes of this Mattel hoverboard. I would love to have one. That'd just be cool.
Yeah, like a prop replica.
You know what really pisses me off? That people try to call those little things hoverboards that
have
just
wheels? Yeah. It's not hovering.
That's not hovering anything.
It's just wheels.
It's wheels. You're driving. You're riding.
It's a ridey board.
Yeah, I don't understand that. And then people are like, I got a hoverboard.
No, you
did not. You got wheels and you look like an idiot. So the chase ensues. They, you know, I didn't write anything about this. I think they go flying into like a bank through the windows or something.
Yeah, so
then they get arrested.
The end of this part is very interesting because, so again, Marty has no understanding of how the hoverboard works. He's just doing
all
of the exact same stuff that he did in the first one. But what ends up happening after whatever is he ends up there's like a man-made lake in front of the courthouse. And so he ends up over that lake, but hoverboards don't work on water. And so he's still standing there and he's trying to get it to work and it won't. This gives Griff time to go to his car, get his own super duper hoverboard, onto which his three friends can hook up with like a water ski line so that they can be towed by him. I don't understand.
I think they also have hoverboards, but
they also do. But his
hoverboard is like the best.
Yeah.
Because remember the girl, he goes to give it back to the girl.
And she's
like, I don't want that. I got this one.
Well, because it not only is the hoverboard, but it has the jets on the back. Your hoverboards don't work on water unless you've got power. And so now Griff has this bat that he's going to use. And so they go flying at Marty. And it's like, they make it seem like it's such a novel idea that Marty thought to just jump in the water. It's just water, bro. Like, he should have jumped in the water and been out of that lake already by the time Griff goes to get his hoverboard. Instead, they're making it like it's acid. Like, he literally has no place that he can go. If he steps off of that board, he's a dead man. It's just water.
He's pushing it like it's a skateboard, and you hear Griff saying to him, No, it doesn't work on water. Yet he keeps trying, and it's—I don't know. Once again, I think the hoverboard is pretty cool.
It's a logical extension of the skateboard as far as design goes.
While watching it, after this scene, a thing comes up, and this is along with the antique shop, is one of the only things that is pretty accurate in this film, and it says Cubs win the World Series, and. They didn't win in 2015, but after 108 years, they won in 2016.
I knew that they had run it. I knew that they had won it recently.
Yeah, and I think they were in the playoffs or close to the World Series in 2015, and everyone was like, holy shit, like, you know, whatever. And then also, they win the World Series. Now, they didn't play against Miami. I forget who they played with. I have it up here trying to figure out, just see another name. But the Indians. Ah. Okay, so they beat the Indians. But in this, they beat Miami. But the thing that's ironic is back then there was not a Miami team.
Right.
And he goes, Miami? You know, there's a Miami ball club. Yes, there is.
It's the Marlins.
Yep. So there are a few things that this movie did pull off in predicting the future. Biff sees the two Martys.
Yeah.
Not Griff.
This whole part is very stupid. The way... Like, Marty can be forgiven for just about anything that happens in the future. Doc should not have had the conversation that he did with Marty literally right around the corner from the Cafe 80s. Like, even if you hadn't just had this whole spectacle happen, you still shouldn't have it that close. Since you know Marty Jr. is going to be in that vicinity, and you've expressly stated that he cannot see us. Why would you end up having a powwow that close
and talking so loudly about your plan?
It's all so silly.
Biff overhears the entire thing, and what has just happened is, you know, Griff and his gang are being arrested. Meanwhile, Marty gets the sports almanac so that he can go back, you know, into the past
and bet on the Cubbies
and bet on sports. Doc sees that and is like, that's not why. You heard it in the trailer. That's not why I created the time machine. This whole time, Jennifer, who they just laid in an alley because once they got, you know, back to the future, they had to use like a Men in Black like mind eraser on her.
It was an
alpha. That would put her to sleep.
It was an alpha wave inducer. So alpha waves help you to fall asleep. So it doesn't wipe her memory. It just knocked her out.
She'll wake up and think it's a dream.
Exactly.
But the cops find her and decide to bring her home because every cop has like a fingerprint thing.
Yeah.
They could tell who you are. And they know that this is Mrs. McFly.
If it was a black character.
Was Jennifer McFly.
You think they would have just shot the sleeping black person?
It's a
black person.
That's how it works. They would have just opened fire. That's they would have called for backup and opened fire with like seven police officers.
They would have turned off their body cams and said, he's coming right for us.
Yep. Doc basically says, I'm getting rid of this almanac, and throws it in the trash, and he says, we're going to have to go to your home to intercept Jennifer before she sees her past self.
It's very funny that Doc, in no uncertain terms, says the words time machine or I invented a time machine or some, you know, variation of that. He says it like five different times, and meanwhile, Biff is right by that screen door that they're standing in front of.
Yep.
I didn't build the time machine. The time machine that I built, Marty, this DeLorean, this time machine that I built, I didn't do it to get money. But let's go back in time with the time machine. This almanac that you want to use with my time machine to make money? We can't do that, Marty. Meanwhile, Biff's like, hey, all right. A flying DeLorean. I haven't seen one of those in 30 years.
So Biff grabs the almanac, sees them leaving the DeLorean and follows them in the DeLorean so that he can, of course, get control of the DeLorean. The cops drop Jennifer off at her house, and I wrote, the scenery channel sucks.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't want that in my house.
They
open the window, and there's an actual window, so why not just, you know.
The scenery channel isn't terrible, but the screen that they have is bad. I would imagine that what we're seeing isn't actually indicative of the quality of their programming. It's more just a real quick station identification. But it's also funny that the neighborhood that Marty lives in is a prestigious neighborhood in his 1985.
Oh, yeah. So he's excited about it?
Yeah. But in 2015, it's a shithole. And it's also interesting. I think they say something like only like degenerates, punks and zipheads live there, or something like that. And I think zipperhead is actually
it's a derogatory term for Koreans or Vietnamese.
Yeah.
Do you want to know why?
Why?
Because, and this is pretty morbid, I figured this out watching a Vietnam documentary.
Well, you didn't figure it out. It was explained.
Well, yeah. Okay. Well, I my mind went, oh, wow. The reason they were called zipperheads is because there'd be so many bodies and whatever, and they wouldn't care, and they'd just ride over them with tanks.
No.
And their bodies would have the tank treads across their face.
Oh, wow. Like a zipper. Wow. Yep. That's rough. That's pretty brutal, right?
Turn. So anyway,
you know what? Let me tell you about another group of hate mongers that were just following orders.
They were called Nazis.
Yeah.
Right. So Jennifer is dropped back off at her house. Did they wake her up before they leave? Yes. The cops kind of get her.
She wakes up on the couch.
Okay.
So they're able to like bring her in, I guess.
Well, they use her fingerprint.
Oh, I guess. And then they, wow. But still, are they allowed to enter her home?
They weren't arresting her or anything. They were just trying to
help her home. But they're allowed to enter the premises? That seems... I don't know if that's a world I want to live in.
I wrote, as soon as I see the daughter, I did not know this was Michael J. Fox. I wrote, as soon as I see the daughter, the daughter looks much older than Elizabeth Shue and is ugly.
As soon as I saw the face, and I was like, that looks like a dude's face. And I wanted to look up if it was a dude. But I was definitely like, wow, that's not... Because when they first... When Doc mentions that Marty has a daughter, I automatically pictured his sister from the first one. And so when she came down, I was like, wait, what?
I didn't realize how much of a Eddie Murphy / like Madea movie this was.
Yeah, right?
I didn't know.
This was Michael J. Fievel said Michael Jackson. This was Michael J. Fox's tour de force.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, no, this is, I'm going to play every role in this. I would play Doc Brown if they let me, but Christopher Lloyd's a diva and he wants to be in this movie.
Elizabeth Shue is kind of realizing what's going on here and that something is wrong. So she's trying to hide from the people in the house. And so the daughter is there. A fake Crispin Glover comes
they
in.
They end up showing up. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, does Marty Jr. show up?
Marty Jr. shows up and Grandma shows
eventually,
up. Eventually.
Yeah. Eventually she herself. Oh, yeah.
Hydration level 4, please.
Biff followed. When older Marty comes home to this house, they're like, it's thing. This is they tried too hard.
Yeah,
the two ties.
Yeah,
it's just stupid.
No point.
Yeah, like
no
you knew
point.
That was not
fashion's
be...
weird, but there's usually yeah. some sort of a semblance of a point behind it.
Yeah.
Two ties, you don't get that. Maybe like two bow ties, like one on top of the other. That would have been interesting.
That, just,
but side by
so
side,
it looked like
just...
they were trying way too hard to do something different.
Yeah.
I loved the hydrator where they put in they open up this yeah. little package of pizza, put it in the hydrator within like 5 seconds. It comes out a perfect Pizza Hut pizza.
It comes out piping hot, but the pan is itself not a bit. Apparently, like it wasn't heated up, so to speak, like an oven as much as hydrated. So Grandma Lorraine is able to just reach in and pull out the metal pan without an oven mitt or anything.
During this whole time, okay.
Jennifer's hiding in the laundry room thing. She's looking out between.
When does Marty and Doc show up? Because at this point, I have Biff taking the DeLorean because
right.
they're away from the DeLorean.
So Doc is going to the house. Marty is changing. Marty finishes changing and then sees a dog being walked by a robot flying thing. And so he just leaves the DeLorean with the door open, which was very, very irresponsible. That's when Biff takes it. Now at this point, I think this is when
in the house, older Marty, it comes home and is fired by his boss Flea.
He's tricked into the whatever thing that Flea has going on.
Yeah,
and is then fired by someone who looks like Chosen.
Yes, is immediately McFry! Fired.
McFry.
And I wrote, it's 2015, and they're still using 80s printers.
Yeah.
So like when he gets fired, it comes out like and it says you're fired. Yeah. What the hell was that? You would think they would just have like a normal thing, like look like it's being printed out.
Yeah.
But of better quality. Jennifer sees herself and goes into shock, just like Doc predicted earlier in the movie. Either she'll something or she'll go into shock.
Now, either the universe will end or she'll go into shock and faint. Now, actually, just real quick, just before that point, this is actually it's real easy to gloss over because kind of so much happens and it happens so quick. But this is actually, this whole sequence where you meet the family is actually like really very sad. It's a very sad kind of dynamic, by which I mean it seems the family loves each other and this and that, but you find out that Marty, when he was a kid, got goaded into some sort of street race with somebody in a Rolls Royce that he caused an accident of, and so he wound up getting hurt and had to give up his music career. The family is poor. The shit that they have is like
breaking
and not the newest stuff. So like the video screen, even the thing that has the fruit.
Which, by the way, that thing is just completely impractical.
Oh, absolutely.
Because if it comes out of the ceiling, that means that the room above you is just where the fruit is.
Yeah.
So you're taking away an entire like bedroom or office.
And just
or
the
whatever.
Amount of energy it would take for something like that to, it's just, it's impractical. But then on top of that, then he takes the thing from Needles, and Needles is like, you can take care of your family. All your money problems will be taken care of. And so he does it because he gets called a chicken. Nobody calls me Chicken Needles. Nobody. This is stupid. But then when he gets fired, he's like, oh, you can't fire me. Oh, my God. Oh, God. What am I going to tell Jennifer? And it's just this, like, heartbreaking, sad, shitty life. And it's like, obviously, you understand that it's kind of like almost from a kid's point of view. Like, I hope I die before I get old. Like, Marty never wants to stop rocking. So to find out that Marty was forced to stop rocking and now just lives this humdrum office life. Just all of it. It's very, it's not the future that you want to see your characters have from the first one.
And the makeup they put on him makes him look like a Dick Tracy villain. I brought up Dick Tracy a lot.
He looks
but
like the thumb.
There's a lot of things over Elvira in this that reminded me of Dick Tracy.
Like mumbles or a thumb. Yeah. But
the camera phone, that's accurate.
Yes.
One of the few things. I mean, we sat here and pointed out all the inaccurate things.
Well, we did a whole other episode.
Yeah, but I will point. That's why I'm pointing out the few accurate things that kind of came out of it.
Now, I also do like that they show during that part, again, when Marty says, you can't fire me. Oh, God, what am I going to tell Jennifer? It shows young Jennifer. And it shows that she's moved by it, too. She's not, you know, she's not just like a bitch. You know, it shows that she feels for it. She really cares for Marty, even though it's old Marty. She cares for the fact that, or maybe she cares for the fact that she's part of she will grow up to have this life, you know, whatever the case may be. But it's just a really sad part. She sees herself. She yells, I'm old. Old Jennifer yells, I'm young. And they both faint.
But Doc catches young Jennifer and drags her out as she's fainting.
Correct. Because he had talked to her. He had talked to her at the window saying, like, hey, we're here. Come to the fucking front door.
Biff quickly now returns from the past.
Biff getting out of the DeLorean. It looks like he really hurts himself because the cane breaks.
Well, yeah, he's all like messed up. He can't get out. Then the cane gets stuck. It breaks the cane.
They're supposed to, I'm almost positive. They're supposed to find the broken cane piece, which lets them know. But it sounds like literally it breaks and it sounds like he stabs himself. And then when it shows them leaving the DeLorean and it shows old Biff leaning against like another car, he's like, it looks like he's going to die. Like it literally looks like, this is silly. Just these noises.
So at this point, there's also, so Biff has gone to the, we don't know what happened, but Biff went to the past and is now back. He gets out and leaves and thinks everything's good. Now there's, at this point, there's an Old West premonition. I don't know what is said. I don't know if it's when Doc says something like,
I'm going to destroy the time machine. My only regret is I was never able to go back to my favorite time period, the Old West.
Yeah. So now they get in the DeLorean, Jennifer, Marty, and Doc, and they head back to 1985. Things are very different when they show up. Marty's house is not his.
I mean, you can tell right as soon as they show up, it's like the land is dark. It's like there should be lights, and there's not. It just looks like fires.
When they drop off Jennifer, her house has bars on the window.
Which he mentions.
Yeah, he's I don't remember that. Then he goes into his house, and it's a whole different family that lives there, and he has to get the hell out because the dad's ready to shoot him. There's drive-bys.
Yeah.
Like, right in his neighborhood. As a matter of fact, they're trying to shoot the old principal.
Mr. Strickland, yeah.
Yeah. And then he goes into town, and he sees Biff's Hotel and Casino, this huge high-rise. It's the only thing that we've seen in this new 1985 that looks nice.
Yeah.
And it's this massive hotel slash casino that is dedicated to Biff.
And this is where you get I Can't Drive 55 by Sammy Hagar.
Yeah, one of his solo joint projects.
Great stuff. Great stuff. My brother got me into some solo Sammy when I was younger.
So sorry about that.
I was definitely very glad to hear this. Here is where, firstly, you are introduced to the notion that Biff has an ancestor from the Old West named Buford Mad Dog Tannen. And then you find out that he married his high school sweetheart, Lorraine, was it Bennett? Lorraine?
I don't know.
Wow. And
of course, after she was already with George and he died.
Kurt, now, because because
Marty was had.
Right. No, exactly. And so this did George die when he was already, did he become a successful science fiction writer in Biff's future and then get killed?
I think so, because he had success, right?
Right.
And then Biff had success because Biff had all the money for the Almanac.
Right, exactly.
So the only thing he could do to get Lorraine was to
get rid of George.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. So the end events of one did happen. But then
I didn't see the date of his death.
Right.
But I'm just assuming.
You're assuming
Marty
so
was born. We know that.
And
the other kids were born.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. And not only that, you would imagine that the crux of George's success was the Under the Sea dance. And we're able to see through this movie that there was no plan of Biff's to kill George at the Under the Sea dance so that he could be with Lorraine after that, you know? So he would have still had
together.
That same sort of life. It's just Biff would have also gotten rich. But yeah, so you find...
Marty
can't fucking take it. Marty loses his mind when he finds out that Biff married Lorraine
Biff's cronies. He goes into... right at the entrance of Biff's hotel and casino, there's like a museum dedicated to Biff.
I love it.
He that's when he sees that he married his high school, and he's like, no. But then Biff's security grabs him and brings him up to the penthouse suite where Leah Thompson is his wife. And Leah Thompson is Lorraine, is basically like a prisoner to Biff.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But he made her get a boob job. And she has like, to harken back, like Elvira cleavage.
Yeah. Just that the inner, you see the half the inner boob. Great stuff.
Now I have and he finds out his dad is dead. And then I have Doc explains how it happened, but must go to the past when Biff got the almanac. How did Marty get back in touch with Doc?
He goes to the graveyard to see George's grave. And Doc finds him there.
Okay.
And so Doc explains something happened while we were in the future to cause this offshoot in 1985, and it had to have been the almanac. So Marty, and this is actually a good point, because as many times as I've seen this movie, I thought the same thing that Marty says, which is, well, why don't we just go back to the future, back to 2015, and either stop me from buying the book or destroy the book or just stop Biff from taking the time machine. And Doc explains, if we go into the future now, it'll be the future of this timeline. Not the timeline that we went to at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. So you have to go all the way back.
Yeah, that really is very... It seems very simple on the face of it. Like, obviously, that would make sense. But when you get into time travel, it's like kind of all bets are off. It's a very, very clever way of explaining why things have to happen the way they do, and also being able to use that footage that you've already shot but allow you to see it from a different angle. Almost, again, I know I've used it before, but almost like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead, where you're seeing these major events, but you're seeing it from a different viewpoint. And it's very, very cool, very well done. That's what Doc says, and this is what happens to me. And you just find out that Doc was committed because Biff wanted him out of the way.
Yes.
Crazy, wild-eyed scientist.
So I love how Marty goes, okay, well, he has to figure out when Biff gave Biff the almanac.
Right.
And he goes into Biff's hotel and casino to talk to Biff, and Biff just tells him.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no, like, trying whatsoever. Even though he was warned that there might be a kid and a crazy old man who are going to try to F up this,
But that's why he tells him, because he's planning on killing him anyway. It doesn't matter. You're going to die. You can't tell anybody. But it did make me think, because Marty first comes in and Biff's in his hot tub with two ladies that aren't Lorraine. And Ed Marty says something. Biff is like, why would I tell you anything? And he's like, Gray's Sports Almanac. And Biff says something like, you heard him, ladies. Party's over. And it just made me think of RoboCop when fucking Red Foreman's like, bitches, leave. And then they do, and then he blows up the guy.
Well, Biff tells him right away, November 12th, 1955, which is, of course, the date of the Under the Sea dance. Biff got the almanac.
That date is like the Tatooine of fucking Back to the Future. It's like everything has to go through that date.
Yes. Well, I haven't seen the third movie in a while.
But I would imagine it has to go through November 12th, 1955.
Then I have there's a shootout with Biff and Thug. So basically, he figures out the date. Then escapes Biff by like throwing like an ashtray in his face.
Okay, he whips this ashtray like it's a frisbee, and you imagine, okay, well if it hits Biff, it's gonna break his nose or something. But it embeds itself into the chair back.
It had little spikes.
Little spinies. He would have killed Biff.
Well, okay. then he goes up to
the roof.
The only place he can go is up to the roof. And Biff meets him up there, and he goes, Biff says, why don't you jump? You know, because that'll make it even easier on me. You know, suicide is much cleaner. And then he jumps, but of course Doc is there with the DeLorean, with the save, and they head back to 1955.
Marty says, I'm going to go to the police. And Biff says, kid, I own the police. And then you also find out that Marty is going to die. Perhaps it's poetic justice. Two McFlys with the same gun.
Oh, yeah, he admits it.
You find out that Biff murdered George. You also find out when Biff first sees Marty in the penthouse after Lorraine wakes him up that Marty is supposed to be apparently in a boarding school in Switzerland. Like a little son of a bitch.
And that's why he's not running into his future self.
His future self. Which they covered that nicely.
Or current self in a different timeline.
Correct. Oh, his alternate self, we'll call it.
Yeah. There's a lot of moving parts in this movie.
Okay, and so now, he's escaped from. Okay, now we have to go back to 1955, and they do.
Yeah, Marty is now following 50s Biff, who's sexually harassing Lorraine.
It's bad. It's real bad. Like, I'm no...
He's like pulling up her dress.
Yeah, I'm no, like snowflake, but it's like, you know, when it's there, you know? Someday you're going to be... You'll be screaming down the street like a madman.
Yeah.
Someday you're going to be my wife. Like, God, shoot this kid now. He's going to murder somebody.
Old Biff is now closing in on young Biff. And young Biff just got his car fixed from when he ran it into the manure.
$300.
Yeah. And I'm reading Biff sexually harasses Lorraine. Old Biff and young Biff meet at the car, and he exchanges the sports almanac. Now, one of the main things that Doc and Marty had to do was let Biff give young Biff the sports almanac and then go back.
Okay.
Because if they didn't, then Biff would know that his plan didn't work and possibly try to do it again.
Yep.
So they had to let Biff come back to the 50s, give young Biff the almanac, get back in the DeLorean, and go without them seeing Marty or Doc.
That's...
Which they did do successfully.
Slick. That's a slick crux to the issue. You can't just go back and beat up Biff and fucking, you know, end it right there. You have to let this happen because otherwise paradoxes and things.
Now, what's the deal with Biff's grandma's voice? Because he goes home and it's always like this.
It's got to be just him. It has to be Thomas F. Wilson.
It reminds me of something. Like, what? What are you doing? I don't know what it is that I'm thinking of. It may be like it's close to like Christmas Story when they call on the phone to his friend and she's like, what? What? And it just beats our kid. But it's something like that when every time you hear Biff's grandma's voice at Biff's house, it's just some weird screaming. Doc runs into old Doc in this time.
Yeah.
Frame. Now, I don't understand. What I don't understand is if they're back in the 50s, how is Doc running into Doc setting up for something? Oh, that was also the 50s.
Yeah, to send Marty back to 1985 in the first one.
Okay. So he runs into himself but never looks himself in the face and actually does help.
Yeah. 5/8, don't you mean 3/4? Huh.
Oh, you're right.
And he's not like, how did you know that I meant that?
And he also says, just get out of there.
Yeah.
Instead, he like holds a conversation. Oh, what are you doing? Some kind of weather experiment?
And then he tells him how it's going to end up. Oh, there's going to be a storm. There's going to be lightning and thunder. Hey, what are you, from the future or something, old man? universe right,
do you
explodes.
Have anything, do you have anything before Biff arrives at the dance? Because that's the next thing I have. Because Marty, there's some antics where Marty gets is in the back of his car and trying to get the almanac, then gets stuck in Biff's garage because Biff locks the garage.
Right.
And then Biff leaves for the dance.
Correct. There's really nothing else to it. He tells, but Doc tries to find Marty, but he passes Biff, who has Marty in his car, but doesn't realize that. So, yeah, no, that's pretty much, there's not much to it.
So Marty gets to the dance also, and he has these binoculars, and he sees his old self arriving, not old man self. He sees him in the last movie arriving to the dance with his mom in the car.
Yes.
And obviously we all know where that's going. That's a very uncomfortable scene. Strickland sees Biff outside. Now Biff is causing a little bit of chaos. He's, you know, being a jerk. He's adding alcohol to
the
punch.
Yeah, they spike the punch. They're yeah, looking, so they're the principal is on him. Skin magazine.
Yeah, so the principal is on him, and Biff is outside looking at, you know. So and the principal comes out and takes the almanac from Biff, and goes and it's it weirded me. I was like, because I didn't remember. I go, why isn't Biff upset he's taking that?
Yeah, right.
Like, what's the deal here? Then you have this whole scene where the Strickland, the principal, goes up to his office and Marty follows.
Has a little
and
drinky poo.
Yeah, and eventually gets his hands on the almanac, but then realizes that they talked about it earlier in the movie that this book had a cover.
Yeah, it's just
and
the
he
dust
just
jacket.
Put the he put the dust jacket cover over the Ooh La La porno magazine.
Ooh La La.
And this whole time,
Ooh La La.
Yeah, this whole time Marty chased him down just to get the porn, and Biff actually does still have the sports almanac that he needs to get.
You get a great line when Strickland first talks to Biff outside, and he goes, you know, Mr. Tannen, what does he say? Oh, Mr. Tannen, is that alcohol I smell? And he goes, I wouldn't know, sir, because I'm too young to drink it. And then he says something like, oh, you're doing some light reading? What is this, homework? And Biff says, no, it can't be homework, sir, because I ain't at home. And that pisses off Strickland. He gets all mad.
Yeah, but Strickland
gets slacker.
Throughout the whole series, Strickland just gets pissed off at anything.
But
so,
yeah, Marty can't believe his good fortune, because once Strickland finishes his drink, he just takes the almanac and throws it in his garbage as he leaves. Oh,
yep.
I don't need this anymore.
But it's
Marty's
not
like,
almanac.
Wait, what? Ooh la la.
Marty looks out the window and sees with his binoculars the scene from the first movie when George pulls Biff off of Lorraine and punches him out.
I like that, because Marty is saying to Doc, I followed what I thought was the book, and it wasn't.
Yeah, now I don't know how
I have no idea where Biff even is. I don't know how I'm going to find him before we need to do what we need to do. And it's...
But then he remembered
where
everybody
is. You hear
her
screaming, and okay, yeah. No, very, very good. And then the one guy, did he steal his wallet? I think he stole his wallet.
Well, yeah, so Marty runs up and takes the almanac off of a knocked-out Biff. And yeah, there's the guy who thinks he's like, did you sell his wallet? Now Marty has to stop. Okay, here's where we get into it. He got the almanac, right?
Yes.
Doc is getting the DeLorean ready. He goes back, movie over, happy ending. Here's where all the extra things start happening in this movie, just like in the first movie, where you think it's over. They could have wrapped it up with a nice bow. And not that it makes the movie worse, but it's just like, okay, again.
I mean, this one part makes sense. I could see having this part. But then the part when Biff gets the book back and they have to chase him down again, that
well, because
we didn't
now
need that.
Because now current Marty has pissed off Biff's goons and runs into the dance to get away from them. But then they see old Marty up on stage getting ready to perform Johnny B. Good,
right,
and think he changed and got up on stage already.
And so now they're going to beat the shit out of
and
him
they
once he's done.
Yeah, and they go to the side of the stage. So now Doc tells Marty, well, you got to stop them from that, because then that Marty won't get back to the DeLorean in time
right.
if they beat him up. So now it's like a whole nother thing. And once again, Marty from 2 saves Marty from 1 and you know, and gets and makes it so that he doesn't get knocked out by the goons. But then he's outside, runs into Biff, and Marty knocks out Marty.
Yeah. There are a number
calls him a chicken again.
There are a number of different times, and I want to go back through the first one to double check one thing. But there's a number of things where they tie in events of the second one as they happen, literally as they happen in the first one. So again, Marty,
it's done very,
very
well.
Very, very well.
Like the time travel and the idea of all these different worlds and dimensions intertwining without each other seeing each other is done outstanding at the end of this movie.
I mean, like little things like, okay, so in the first one, when Marty is doing Johnny B. Goode, you have Chuck Berry, or you have Marvin Berry, leaves the stage and almost walks into that ladder. You see him in the first one. He kind of pauses and he's like, oh, I got to go around this ladder. And then you find out that in the second one, literally 1 second before Marvin Berry got there, Marty climbed up that ladder.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's just so, it's, I mean, again, it's very clever. It's very well done. And again, you see these classic scenes that you can almost quote by heart, that you can see in your head the cinematography of the shot. And you see it from these different angles. And it's just very, very cool. It was very, very good job.
Yeah, very cool how the whole thing ties together. Now, I mean, it makes it, I mean, I don't know if, I'm sure there's interviews, but did Robert Zemeckis or whoever wrote this write all three together? I mean, I feel like you had to have the Marvin Berry thing.
Yeah.
Like it just all fit together so perfectly the way it was planned out.
Yeah.
Like I could picture him writing this and having like a little like diorama.
Yeah.
So that he could in his mind like really see where everyone would be. And how he was going to make them not be seen.
And not only that, I wonder if there were certain parts where they were banking on there being a sequel. And so they had filmed things that they would have to use. Like Doc Brown setting up for the weather experiment, having a conversation with current Doc Brown. Did they film Christopher Lloyd reading those lines in the expectation that they would need that scene for him to talk to himself in a second movie? Things like that always fascinate me. And it's always hard to find stuff like that out. Really, and that annoys me, but it's all, that's so interesting to think that they, like, almost, and I don't think the Lord of the Rings movies did it, but they had done all their stuff kind of that fast paced too, and so it's like, again, I wonder if they did it just in the off chance that they would end up needing it.
So like I said, he had complete success in saving other Marty from the goons, but Biff so current Marty is it's hard to explain when you're just explaining it. Current Marty runs out of the dance and is right outside the door of the dance, and inside through the doors he can see the last Marty doing the scene.
Back to the Future 1 Marty.
Yeah, Back to the Future 1 Marty talking with Lorraine and George, being like, you know, that scene where he's like, if your kid lights a fire,
yeah,
you know, whatever. And then Biff sees him and says, you know, I'm going to kick your ass, you know, whatever. And during this scene, this whole I'm going to beat your ass chicken scene, Marty's standing by the door and the other Marty runs out. The door smacks the other Marty and knocks him down, and that Marty leaves. And Biff is like, what?
I really liked that. I liked how they did that. How it was. I mean, I know that we just finished talking about how we liked how they did that. But that specific scene, even though there had to be, they worked it out that there had to be some scenery chewing while they waited for Back to the Future 1 Marty to catch up and be able to come out that door. But in my head, I remembered it incorrectly. Where I remembered it when Biff talks to Back to the Future 2 Marty, I remembered it almost like H2O, where Back to the Future 2 Marty is looking through the window at Back to the Future 1 Marty talking to Lorraine, and then Biff's face on the other side of the glass, like Myers, just like there. But that's not how that happens.
But because Back to the Future 2 Marty was knocked out by Back to the Future 1 Marty, Biff goes down and sees that he has the sports almanac and takes it back.
To be fair, in the shot, right when Biff calls him a chicken for the first time, Marty turns around and starts walking back, and you can very clearly see the sports almanac in his inner pocket in that shot. So Biff really should have said something right then, but that's okay.
Doc and Marty chase Biff in the DeLorean and use the hoverboard. And Marty uses the hoverboard to follow Biff in Biff's car. And he keeps trying to get it because it's in the back seat. But then a news broadcast comes on of local sports scores, and Biff reaches back, takes it. And now and he's like, holy shit, this is right. Puts it down in the seat next to him. So now Marty has to go through the passenger door, and then it turns into this whole chase. I wrote Marty eventually in the end gets the almanac and narrowly escapes, and Biff gets buried in more poop.
More manure. Manure! I hate manure! That's. I also like that. So again, as they're chasing Biff, they're in the flying DeLorean, and Biff, of course, is driving. And Marty says something like, oh, there's Biff right now. Let's land on top of him and put an end to this
like that. Yeah.
And Doc Brown says, Marty, he's in a 46 Ford. We're in a DeLorean. He'll tear through us like tinfoil.
Yep, and it's the truth.
Yeah. Those cars were built to last. And not only that, if you think about it, even just a numbers game, it's strange the way... And this sounds silly, but the way our culture is now, with different models coming out every year, and you're expected, like, okay, in 1955, you should be driving a 55 Ford or a 54 Ford. Biff driving a 1946 Ford in 1955.
Well, it's what a teenager would have had, right, because it's leftover. It's almost secondhand.
Like a jalopy, but it's not. Yeah, no, it's just the numbers threw me off. But yeah, I really like that Doc attests to the strength of the
like my first car was an Oldsmobile Delta 88.
There you go.
And you know, I wasn't able to drive till like 96. So it makes sense. You know, teenagers usually always get used, passed down.
As it should be, yes.
Passed down cars. So they get the almanac. They go back to, of course, everything kind of revolves around the sign for the housing development, because they always are hiding the DeLorean there. And Doc says, you know, Marty, burn the almanac. So he burns the almanac, and you see the newspapers now change. Marty is not, you know, arrested as a kid in 2015.
Well, that already changed before. That changed right after they crashed through the window of the courthouse. But Doc Brown
is not committed.
Now commended.
And George is alive.
George is alive, and the matchbook that Marty has from Biff's
goes from
Biff's Pleasure Palace to Biff's garage.
Yeah.
Doc tells Marty to burn the almanac. It's a super windy night, and Marty
somehow uses these little matches.
He has one match that he lights a plastic cover underneath in one area, and the whole thing.
What
goes
I wanted to know is why didn't he just light the matchbook and drop it?
Yeah,
in?
No,
that would have worked better.
Well, no, because they needed the matchbook so that he could see that it changed.
Oh yeah,
once it was on fire was when it would change.
Then, of course, while Doc is in the air. How did Marty get on the ground and Doc was in the air still?
He was, in order to save Marty from the tunnel, Doc was using the plastic flag streamers.
Yeah, hanging with the hoverboard.
So he never got back into the car. But it's very strange that Doc says, oh, the conditions are terrible. I'm not going to be able to land. I'll have to circle back around and come in from a southern approach. It's like, what? It's a vertical takeoff and landing craft.
Yeah,
like, you just go down. Like, idiot.
But unfortunately, Doc is struck by lightning and the DeLorean disappears. Marty's freaking out because now he's like, wow, I'm stuck in
1950. I was like, wait a minute. You're still in 1955.
Yeah, I like this ending a lot.
Watching this 3 days ago. Wait a minute. He's still in 1955.
So he's standing out there in the rain by the sign, and all of a sudden a car is approaching, and it looks like a little foreboding.
Yeah.
But then the guy gets out, comes over, and goes, are you Marty McFly?
Are you Marty McFly?
He says, yes. Why?
I've got something for you.
And brings him over.
And reaches his hand into the pocket.
Really old letter.
He's
going to
get pumped full of lead.
Yeah, a really old letter. Says, we have been holding on to this for the past 70 years or 100 years, whatever it was.
It was 70 years. And actually, it's funny that you bring that up the way that you did, because it also threw off. So when he says, we've been holding on to this for 70 years, I thought he had gone back to 1855.
He did.
But it wasn't. It was 1885.
Oh, 1885, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Or at least the letter was sent.
But the reason I said 100 is because in 1985, the original story takes place, but we're still back in 1955.
Right.
So, see, it's so much, people.
My brains!
And it's a letter from Doc.
And like, why? Okay, firstly, even if you didn't have an 70-year-old letter, why would you read any letter in the rain?
Like
just getting soaked, running.
And like, any letter from that point would just
it's mud in
smear.
My hands now. Great, thanks.
And the thing they were actually holding was something that could be in a museum.
Yeah. So 70-year-old fucking letter?
But instead they held it.
So they have to ruin it in acid rain. Actually, in 55 it wasn't acid rain. But there's only one man who can help me.
Yep. So basically then Marty runs to where the clock tower was struck and where he went, you know, back to 1985.
So you see again
the first movie.
The first one.
Yeah. And he goes, disappears. Doc's so happy. You know, hey, we did it. And then out from the back, here comes Marty running again.
I love Doc's freak out.
Oh, me too. I loved this.
You can't be here. You can't be. I just sent you back to the future. No, I'm back. Back from the future. Great Scott. And then the to be concluded.
Yeah.
Terrific.
And then, of course, the extra scenes, which were in my Amazon one.
Were they?
Yeah, they were in Amazon. Like you said, they're on the DVD.
I really hope they didn't show that in the theater. I hope they left it at to be concluded, and then it was credits.
Me too. I'm going to have to look back at my VHS when I eventually find it.
So much of that movie. That, yeah. I mean, you wouldn't have any context if they did show it in the theater. Like, if you were just seeing it for the first time, and they showed those scenes, there would be no context. Like, to us, we're like, oh, it gives away the entire movie. But all the same, I wouldn't want them to have any indication that any work had been done on the third one. Like, well, literally just keep people guessing.
Yeah, and I also wouldn't, like, the fact that they said 1855, if they would have cut it there, I feel like people would have walked out of the theater going, wait a minute, they made a bunch of Old West things. So if they didn't show that they already filmed stuff, people would be like, oh my God, remember all of the,
Exactly. Even just talking about it now, I'm getting chills. I'm like, oh man. Except I've seen Back to the Future 3.
Yeah, exactly. It's like fucking Last Crusade. It's like, oh,
I love
come
Last
on.
Crusade, though. I do.
Really?
I do.
I mean, it's okay. Once again, Back to the Future 3, too. It's okay.
Yeah.
But it's just
I won't turn it off like, ugh, Back to the Future 3. But I'm not like, I don't talk about it in the same excitement that I do 1 and 2.
Well, it's going to be a while before we get to Back to the Future Part 3.
Probably.
But I'll tell you what, it's not going to be that long.
No.
Before we get back from this ad break. And we give you our final reviews and our overall final verdict for 1989's Back to the Future Part 2. So we will be right back.
Hey, we'll talk to you then.
Child's Play, Child's Play 2, Bride of Chucky.
This is Scotty Riggs.
Hey, this is Rocky Gray, composer for 1031 and The Barn.
Hi, I'm Paige. I am the creator and director of Fredheads, the documentary.
Hello. Salutations. My name is Jeremy Todd Moorhead, and I'm the star of Fredheads.
This is Mitchell Mussolino. I play Sam in the horror film The Barn, and you are listening to The Midnight Jury.
You're listening to The Midnight Jury.
You're listening to The Midnight Jury.
And you're listening to The Midnight Jury. Me. I get this feeling I'm in motion, a certain sense of liberty.
Hey, what's up? It's Mike again. I know you are a diehard Midnight Jury fan, and I know that because you've gotten through most of the episode and made it to our final ad break this week. You are our most important listeners, and we appreciate everything you do for us. That's why we need you to help us fight against censorship and make sure you like, retweet, and share our stuff on Twitter and Facebook at Midnight Jury. Our free speech has been threatened. We've been censored on iTunes and kicked off of previous networks, and we will always have the last laugh. If you tell five friends and they tell five friends, we can take over the globe. It's up to you, our most diehard Midnight Jury listeners. Please continue your loyal support and we will continue to say whatever we want and speak our minds on any topic we deem necessary. But now, it's time to finish this break and end out the show.
Recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting from the current to the way back. Join the impact player Phil Rea and the Portuguese man of war Choppy for the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, live every week on rantemradio.com. Get all our episodes over at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Audio Boom, Google Play, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com, and TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com.
Everyone knows a lot of things can change in the span of 10 years, but when it comes to professional wrestling podcasting, one thing is still guaranteed. The Shining Wizards is the only place to get all the latest wrestling news, interviews with the greatest guests, and of course, tons of laughs in discussing the world of wrestling. The show is still available on Monday nights at 7 p.m. East on RantEMRadio.com and Rant Entertainment Media on the TuneIn app, and it's still available on all podcasting platforms. Check us out. Head over to ShiningWizards.com, where it's still wrestling talk and talk about wrestling.
Hi, this is Oopsie Panda, and I'm here to talk about the smartest man I know, Handsome Dan Lopez. He used to have a podcast all about professional wrestling, but he is literally so smart. After nearly 100 episodes, he ran out of things to say about it. But being the
consummate
entertainer that he is, the podcast Handsome Dan's Final Say lives on. Through segments like Keeping It Classic, in which Dan reviews movies from the HBO and home video generation, My Musical Journey, which takes you on a trip through Dan's personal cassette to the albums that shape his musical taste. And The Masturbators, where Dan and longtime friend Jay Chewbacca will debate just about anything under the sun. Handsome Dan's Final Say has plenty to keep you listening for years to come. DansFinalSay.podbean.com or search Handsome Dan's Final Say on Spotify. Is that okay?
Tired of the PC police telling you what you can and cannot say? Want a show that travels back to the 80s and 90s, where the badass hosts have beaten down cancel culture on three separate occasions and carried on to gloat about it? Since 2013, The Midnight Jury is that show. Travel back to the malls and arcades, pop in your VHS, and join us where the 80s and 90s return from the dead. Conan, tell them where to find us.
WLWstudios.com, home of the Midnight Jury podcast, hosted by Midnight Mike and Calvin Brody.
Also available on all major podcast platforms via the Shining Wizards Network, and join in the conversation on Twitter at Midnight Jury.
Broadcasting from outside the Big Apple, this is WLWstudios.com, New York City.
We are back on the Midnight Jury, ready to give you our final reviews. Combine those for the Midnight Jury final verdict on 1989's Back to the Future Part 2. I am Midnight Mike.
I'm Calvin Brody.
All right, Cal, give it to me. In the ass.
In the ass. No, this was a great movie. I like that it just like Rocky, it brings you in the tail end of the first one, even though they reshot it. It brings you in the tail end of the first one so that you're familiarized with the stakes going into this movie.
Which meant more back in the 80s, because it's not, you didn't, today you can watch movies.
Any
like,
movie.
Yeah, like if you're going to see a part two or three, you can watch the other ones like with no problem.
Correct.
In your own home.
Back then there were years.
You had to be reminded.
Literal years between movies. So yeah, I like how they took you back through it. I like how they did, I think, both raise and answer a lot of questions that viewers would have raised if they hadn't done it themselves, you know? And just as you and I discussed, it was very well done as far as all the different moving pieces. integrating stuff from two into how stuff already happened in one, stuff that you already knew. Just very, very well done. If the bit at the end, as far as the sneak preview of three, was a full thing, that does actively work against it. That's in a movie that is almost perfect as far as in what it attempts to do with itself. Something like this that really isn't needed and helps to kind of almost spoil the third one. Like I said, I feel actively works against it. So I am giving this one an A minus.
All right. And I'm just going to throw it up in there so we can hit a double. Oh, you just hit this here.
Hit it.
I give it an A.
Ah.
So the reasons are the same as Cal. I don't necessarily, I like to think that in the theater, even though I thought it just happened in the theater, it'd be awesome if it just, like you said, to be concluded, end.
Yeah.
But yeah, this movie is the way, like I said, for Robert Zemeckis to do this, you literally need like a diorama or like a Venn diagram. What is it?
Well, a diorama or, yeah.
But a diorama, I always picture like the horseshoe or the shoebox like standing
well, I mean,
on
something like a scale model.
Yeah,
something
you
that
would need
lets you,
a scale yeah, model.
Like a step up from storyboards, certainly.
Yeah, to pull
something
this
where you
can off.
Physically see the dimensions.
And where
and the
everyone would
yeah.
be.
Yeah.
Very specific.
This is it's very like the term is thrown around almost as a joke now, but it really is like big brain stuff. Like you really yeah. you have to keep track of a lot of stuff. And it's a lot of creativity.
I wouldn't be able to write this without some sort of scale model.
Correct.
Like there's no way my head would be able to comprehend where all these characters were at different points without having them physically there and moving them.
Yeah.
And saying, okay, this is, you know.
Writing the script as you're trying to figure all this shit around.
Yeah, it was just amazing.
There. Yeah. No, absolutely.
So, yeah, I gave it an A. You gave it an A minus. That's an easy one. Ladies and gentlemen, let's hit the Midnight Jury gavel for the final verdict.
All right.
The verdict is in, and the overall grade for Back to the Future Part 2 is an A.
Well earned, well deserved.
And like I said, I think Back to the Future 1 got pretty much the same grade.
Probably.
You'd be hard pressed to find an overall score on the Midnight Jury of a Part 1 and a Part 2 that were both A's. I mean,
I feel like Leprechaun, maybe Police Academy.
None of those.
Might be the only two.
None of those. Without a doubt, none of those. The only ones I could think of is
Star Wars and Empire, maybe.
Star Wars and Empire, maybe. Halloween 1 and Halloween 2, maybe.
And I feel like when we do Godfather 2, it'll be Godfather 1 and Godfather 2.
Even though, unpopular opinion, Godfather 2 I like, but it's like I think Godfather 1 is way better.
I've never seen Godfather 2, but Godfather 1 is such a masterpiece.
Yeah, Godfather 1 is really good. Maybe Rocky 1 and Rocky 2? I don't know. Maybe, it'd be hard-pressed to maybe you guys out there tweet us at Midnight Jury. Or at Midnight Mike Show, spell MIDNITE Mike Show, and let us know if you know of any the part one and part twos that could possibly be two A's. I think they are both just
like
yeah.
Jason 1 and Jason 2? Probably not.
No, I don't think so. Like I don't
Police
even know.
Police Academy is the only one that
question,
I'm positive.
I question whether I would give them both A's. So for you and Adam or anyone else to do it, I mean, that's just unbelievable to me. But I would like to know. I can't think of one. We are the Midnight
like
Jury.
Batman Returns?
Maybe.
Like Superman
Maybe.
And Superman 2? And Superman 2?
Well, we did two different Supermans, too. Go back and check that out.
That was a fun one.
I watched the Donner cut. He watched the theatrical cut. Shoot. We came together, and we were just confused. And it's a good episode. People seem to like Tony Brockett. It's like one of his favorite episodes.
Yeah,
he's not even in it.
I haven't listened to it. I think I was so traumatized. It's like it's a bad dream. Like you study for a test, and it's not right, or you study to do it to perform a piece, you know, for some sort of musical thing or something like that. You don't. That's not the piece that you're doing. It's like, oh God. It's a nightmare.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that was a. But once again, like I said, we got good response from
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we made it work.
So
you know.
I may listen to it soon and yeah, see what the hubbub is about. All right. Yeah, go over to Patreon. Oh, I didn't do our homie segment.
Let's just do it. Let's, Paul Abdul, thank you for stopping into the studio.
I'll do it
here.
We'll
give you a pizza in a minute.
Thank you to everybody who's donated on Patreon, who sent us care packages, who's bought shirts over the last 8 years, who has retweeted us, helped us, followed us. Really, those of you know who you are, and I'm going to name a few of you. Baza Giovanni, Ricky, Tony, Michael, Kathy, Joseph, JP, Donnie, Matt W., J. Chewbacca, Chris K., The Shining Wizards and the Shining Wizards Network, which includes us, the Shining Wizards. Also, thanks to Inconclusive Breakdown, the Turnbuckle Throwbacks, the Archfiend Empire, and of course, the guys over at Get My Go. All of you guys really have supported us, helped us, you know, given us exposure, got merch, all that stuff. We really do appreciate it, people. We didn't plan that. But yeah, we do really appreciate it. Check out all our shows at www.studios.com. We have another live show coming up in July. We're going to welcome our Dr. Ocho 80s correspondent back. Cal will go for that title once
again. I'm taking some fucking vitamin C, bitch. I'm going to be on this trivia shit.
And then we'll go. We're going to have some Navy SEALs. We'll have some other stuff coming up in July. Navy SEALs. yeah, happy summer, everybody. Enjoy it, because before you know it,
it's going to be time for that Halloween special.
Well, that's the good part. The bad part is after that and Christmas, it's you're in the doldrums of winter again.
Yeah, true.
So enjoy this hot weather. That's it from WLW Studios North on the Midnight Jury compound. I am the 21st Century Broadcasting Marvel, Midnight Mike.
I'm your very best pal, Calvin Brody.
I can't wait to see you next time.
The Doc's alive! It's 1985, but he's alive!
Great Scott! Great Scott! I'm thinking of Michael Scott at the end of his... Straight up, not down me.